from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A combined 25,000 people are homeless in San Francisco, Alameda, and Santa Clara counties. That's according to preliminary federal data released just last week. Since 2017, when officials last conducted a census, homeless populations have risen by 43% in Alameda County and 17% in San Francisco. The city of San Jose has seen a 42% increase. And in this segment, we're going to talk about what's behind the region's intensifying homelessness crisis. Joining us in studio is Kevin Fagan, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who has been doing steadily important work on this score. And welcome, Kevin. Good to have you.
Hey, glad to be here.
Well, this is all, I suppose, from some perspectives, bad news, although there is a few lights in this. You've got numbers of veterans homeless going down about 14% and another number of youth going down 10%, and homeless families staying about the same. But let's talk about the rise in numbers, because there is where we need to focus our attention. And this is all federal mandate under HUD. Let's just talk about how they gather this. It's a one-night score, basically.
Right. Yeah. If you were just able to track everyone throughout the year, you'd have about 20,000 people homeless in San Francisco at one point or another. But on one night every 2 years, legions of volunteers and city staff go out and they try to do a one-night count. And it's imprecise, but at least it gives you a snapshot. And that happens every 2 years for most cities. Some places do it every year. And San Francisco counts more thoroughly than the federal guidelines mandate. So the count that the city did in January is actually going to be higher when it finally comes out in July. But this count is a preliminary count. And this is the one you got to give to HUD to try to get the wheels rolling for funding. Early in the year.
But many things aren't included here. You can't get the people who are living on couches in friends' homes, or those who are in hospitals, or those who are in jail. Right?
Yeah, those are huge. The city does make an effort to do jail and rehab centers and hospitals. The people who are couch surfing, that's big, and no one can get their fingers on that one.
Well, what about the fact that the vehicles are just exponentially increasing? I mean, those who are living in their vehicles.
Oh, it's huge, huge. At last count, there were about 500 vehicles in the city parked, and those are just the ones you could count.
The Bayview, you can see them in a line just going straight ahead and almost into infinity.
Huh? You betcha. Yeah, the counselors, street counselors, call that carnation. It's not milk. It's cars.
This is up about close to 50% in terms of those living in their vehicles?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real indicator of a lot of things.
And the displacement is just terrible, and one wonders what can be done, especially in light of the fact that, I mean, have pointed this out in your repertorial work, just the money that's been spent over and over again, more and more money, and now we've got London Breed asking eventually what she wants to have, a $500 million ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the money stop and what is the money doing? Because Jeff Kaczynski, who leads as the homeless czar and everything, says every time somebody is housing is found for someone, three more pop up.
Right. Same in Santa Clara County, Alameda County. Between these three counties, you have the vast bulk of homeless people in the Bay Area. It's, you know, you can make a lot of headway by spending more money doing programs. The big emphasis going forward is going to be on prevention. Helping people stay in their housing, helping people meet their rents, get diverted to mental health care and drug care before they hit the streets, because that's what's fueling it. It's a lot more expensive to fix people once they've become homeless than it is to prevent them from becoming homeless.
Now, how do you prevent them when housing is so expensive and absolutely not meetable by so many people?
Yeah, that's the challenge. I mean, the city, this city and other cities in the nine-county Bay Area passed collectively about $8 billion, if you take in state, you know, proportions, in affordable housing funding in the last few years. That's a lot of money, and a lot of that is going to be spent here. It will create housing for poor people and low-income people, and that's how you get a handle on homelessness, because study after study shows, and I've written it a bunch of times, rents have skyrocketed, housing to own a home alone, let alone has skyrocketed. Wages have stayed flat. You can't save. You can't live well. Despair sets in. I mean, there's all kinds of. It's not that hard to figure out. It's like a lot of housing experts say. Housing is the problem. The other things, drugs, mental illness, sure, that is a factor. But if you can't live on what you make, you're screwed.
Have the navigation centers really ameliorated the problem to noticeable, dramatic degree, in your judgment?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I did a story a little while back looking at how effective they are. I think they are effective. They're expensive. They cost about double what shelters do. And the city's trying to do a modified navigation center model now that's less expensive. But the fact is, if you can help people figure out how to navigate their way out of homelessness and despair and poverty, it works. That means a lot of times people are going to go outside the city. If you can't afford to live here, you can go somewhere else. It means you got to find a job somewhere else. It means you got to leave all the friends and family. But it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Mayor Breed, let's just talk about San Francisco for a moment, has been talking about making real progress, and she's not only talking about new shelter beds, she's talking about, she says, remember the tents. You know, we're not back where we were. In fact, yeah, we've moved forward, and she talks about numbers and says that there are about 1,200 that, under her administration so far, have at least found some kind of temporary housing.
Oh, absolutely. Since 2004, when Mayor Newsom started a huge push on housing and counseling homeless people, I think about 25,000 people have been housed, sent home to their families or put into housing here. It's there. If you didn't have these efforts going on, you would have 20,000 people nightly in San Francisco. That's a guesstimate, and I think it's realistic to expect that it would be huge. People think that it's wasted money. I hear that a lot. Try doing it without that money.
Well, they're also expanding some street counseling. They're talking about creating a vehicle triage center. I mean, there are things in the works here that could, again, make a dent. But the problem is, in some ways, growing, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, it is growing. And it's Margot Cushell, this professor at UCSF, did a study I wrote about a couple of months ago showing that nearly half of the homeless people who are over 50 years old became homeless after 50 years old. Now, which shows that the rents are too high, you can't save any money. If you're poor in lower class, working class, and you get to the age where you can't swing a hammer, can't punch a register anymore, chances are 44% of those homeless people on the street were like that. They wound up homeless because they just couldn't live. And that's going to increase unless something gets done to make housing more affordable and make we lost a lot of pensions.
Unless you forget the population is increasing also.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking with Kevin Fagan about new federal data that shows a dramatic rise in Bay Area homelessness, and you may want to weigh in here. In fact, I invite you to do that with any questions or comments you have. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement in the program, so please feel free to join us now. Again, the number to do that at is 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website and posting any questions or comments there, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Certainly disturbing new figures, but not entirely unexpected. And your thoughts and your reactions and maybe even some proposals or ideas that come from this listenership of ours, which is always really very fertile with ideas and has certainly on the homeless problem has really weighed in and stepped in on many occasions. Let me just talk about this, though, from a quick other perspective with you, Kevin, and that is where we can go in terms of specific policies at this point. I mean, we've tried so many things that one has to feel the hand wringing and feel the, well, almost despair that is accompanying this.
Oh, absolutely. I think one example to look at is Salt Lake City. About 4 or 5 years ago, I went over to Salt Lake City and did a story about how they had actually eliminated their chronic homeless problem. You didn't see people on the streets anymore. It's because they created housing and housing with supportive services, you know, supportive housing, in huge waves, and it fixed the problem. The trouble is they let it slip. You got to stay ahead of the population with enough housing and wages or government support. That's how you get rid of it. That's how you solve it. That's how you solve it for the people who are housed and don't like to see homeless people, and you solve it for homeless people who don't want to be homeless.
Let's hear what our listeners have to say, and we begin, Andrew, with you. You're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, hello. Forgive me. I think I need to get to my phone. I find it so troubling that
consequences change behavior. I've been sober now for 17 years, and I didn't get sober because people were there taking care of my every whim. The reason why this problem continues is because there are no consequences. You can do heroin. You can defecate and urinate all over the city, and there's absolutely no consequence. So around the country, people know that you can come here, and with impunity, you can denigrate. Just this morning, I saw a young man beating his head against the wall, screaming and yelling, obviously high on meth. And I walked by, and frankly, I stopped caring. And I watched other people walk by, this human being suffering. And all I hear is, let's build housing, let's have outreach, let's have free food, let's have a trailer, let's have a shower. And meanwhile, people, if they choose not to go to the navigation center, they don't. What is that about?
Lisa, I think talking about getting tough, and you've heard that certainly by many people who have perhaps gotten to the point where they can't care anymore, they don't want to care anymore.
It's an abomination that mentally ill people are allowed to stay severely mentally ill in the streets. It's an abomination for them. It's an abomination for the people around them. We shut down far too many mental health beds, board and care homes, institutions, and there's not enough places to put them. And most mentally ill people have to sign consent forms to go inside unless they've been through many, many processes of being taken inside to lockups somewhere. That's terrible. And one thing to remember about...
What do you say to people who say, like this caller, it's time to get tough. You got to get tough. That's the only way to deal with it.
I would say, based on, decades of seeing this, get tough. Make the severely mentally ill go into a lockup of some kind or a controlled situation until they get stable. It's because they're not going to choose to go there themselves.
But he's also talking about people who are relieving themselves and, defecating on the street and not done on that in terms of police and law enforcement. I mean, these kinds of things you continue to hear from people who live in the city or work in the city.
Yeah, that's your chronically homeless. That's a segment of your chronically homeless people who have given up. They've been on the streets so long they forget what normal used to be. You take that same person, you give them a stable environment, clean them up. A couple years later, they're horrified at what they used to do in the street. And remember, chronically homeless people are only about a third of the whole homeless population. The other two-thirds are not crapping in the streets and acting out like that. You're seeing a smaller segment of the entire population, the most troubled. You heal the most troubled, and the problem will not be visible anymore.
More of your calls. Let me go next to you. Catherine is joining us. Morning, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi.
I was in Santa Rosa in the late 90s, and I was homeless for 2.5 years. And initially, I stayed at the Armory, and they would feed the women first, and so I got to watch the whole line. And I said, I bet 2/3 to 3/4 of these people are either mentally ill or have substance abuse. And I had a wonderful therapist for all of this, and he worked with street kids in Seattle. And he said, yeah, that's about right. And I see homeless people now in a way that I didn't before. And the main thing I found was I had to find out where I belonged. And I was staying at a really great shelter, and the guy who was the counselor and I were talking about Eckhart Tolle and stuff, and he said, you're an anomaly. And I walked out of the room, and then I walked back, and I said, I'm not an anomaly. I'm a person with a mental illness and no support system.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I was taking antidepressants, and I think they're sort of like a body cast that keeps you in holds you while you heal. And once I healed, I stopped taking them. I went and got a job. I went and got a place to live, and that was it. But I just think that it's not something people do by choice.
No.
Actually, there are some people who are homeless by choice. You've run into them, haven't you?
Yeah,
it's a small number, but
very small. And someone who's mentally ill, congratulations for
absolutely
getting off the street and getting yourself together. No one mentally ill wants it. When you're acting out like that, that's not the person acting out. That's the mental illness acting out. No one really wants to be like that. I really believe that.
Yeah, good for you, Catherine, and thank you for calling us this morning. Here's a tweet that's sort of sobering from Monty, who says, I'm 59, and I wonder if a homeless encampment is my retirement.
Boy, I sure hope not.
More calls. Let me go next to you. Robert in San Jose, good morning.
Good morning. Michael, thank you for having me on. I am a formerly unhoused person. I lived in the largest encampment in the United States here in San Jose. It was the jungle. And fortunately, I was able to get out at the time when they closed it in 2014. I've continued working in this line of work, helping people out in the streets ever since then, and actually even before then. And I want to say that there's a lot of solutions. There's no single solution. But here, at least in Santa Clara County, we have a lot of houses that we call ghost houses. They're homes that are purchased by people as an investment. No one lives in them. They just hang on to them for another 10 years or so and then turn around and sell them as a profit. And that's seriously impacting the amount of space that's available for people to be able to move into. And that causes a lot of displacement because since there's no affordable housing for people that can afford more expensive housing, they're forced into the lower cost of housing and then displacing many, many more people that way. And I think we need to look at this as a way to tax these people that have chosen to do this. A lot of them are foreign investors. And we also have a lot of apartment owners that own thousands of units, and they raise the rents all the time because they can. And fortunately, here in San Jose, we've passed some rental rights and tenant right ordinances that have helped that situation, but it's not complete.
Well, San Jose is, what, up 47%, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, it's
in
huge.
In this recent study?
Yeah. It's got the biggest population in the Bay Area now, or the Santa Clara County does, sure.
And the jungle was really quite something. I mean, I remember when it closed, we did a whole program on that. Let me thank you for the call. It's good to hear from you, Robert, and I appreciate that call. What do you suppose at this point the legislature might be doing now that Scott Wiener's legislation or sponsored legislation seems to have been put in the freezer or whatever?
Yeah, it was. I have to say I was a little surprised at that. I thought there was momentum going that way. You know, it's politics. There has to be The caller has a point about the empty houses.
Yeah.
Some communities have tried to tax and penalize people who leave their houses empty to try to get them to turn around. Trouble is we live in a free enterprise system, so what you're left with is government to make up for the lack that capitalistic free enterprise housing systems create.
Jack has a shout-out to Downtown Oakland Street Team, helping advocate for homeless and getting them off the streets and into jobs, rehab programs, housing, etc. And Catherine wants to know, what effect do you think the tenant protection bill being voted on in Sacramento this week will have on homelessness?
Well, homelessness is a perpetually rolling ball right now.
In Sacramento as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Sacramento has its own severe problem. That's a very area of this state, and I've been to all of them, has its own definition, its own demographic of homeless people. And Sacramento's, that's a pretty rough crowd.
There's only one area in this HUD study that apparently did not go up in homelessness. That's Marin County. What are they doing right?
It's harder to be homeless in Marin. San Rafael has most of them. And you can do that. But, you know, if you're homeless, you're not going to be schlepping out to the West Marin in the trees. Yeah, you're going to be hanging out where the soup kitchens and the services and the panhandling is.
And here's Martin. Martin, join us.
Hey, great program. My question is, what about, you know, concepts like what we're in Ready Player One, where you had multi-story, you know, mobile homes basically stacked on each other. But I also question whether we can, you know, set those environments up without, we're such a litigious society that I can just imagine even the homeless suing, you know, owners or even the structural people for doing something wrong. Is it possible to survive building that kind of economical housing?
What do you think, Kevin Fagan?
Yes, sure. I get most excited on the housing front about mobile stacking housing units. They're cheap. They're quick. You can do them. You can find a place somewhere. I mean, there are always places in communities. Salt Lake did it. L.A. is doing it. We've done it to some extent. We can do it more. San Jose and Santa Clara County certainly can do it, and there's a lot of hope down there because they've passed a $1 billion bond to kickstart this. That's some good hope. And we used to do that before the 80s when 75% of the support for that kind of housing got eliminated. Everyone wonders what happened. Well, it's not that hard to trace.
And Martin, thank you for your call. And right, we go to another caller, and that's Santa Rosa caller Chelsea. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to talk about safe encampments and the fact that so many people are not even able to take care of their basic survival. Here in Santa Rosa, the police are just coming at people, taking their stuff, taking their survival gear. And not only do they not have a stable place to be, a stable place to combat their mental health and their self-medicating issues, and we have fentanyl in our drugs now, and we're spending so much on Narcan, so much on policing, so much on everything. We could just open, like you said, areas that we have available to us. The city of Santa Rosa has 1,400 properties, I think, that are just not being used. And they refuse to let people be stable. They refuse to open safe injection sites everywhere around the Bay Area. Need safe injection sites so that we can test for fentanyl, stop using Narcan, keep these people safe, and give them drug rehabilitation efforts. Also, we're our own support system. When we help each other and we're next to each other, we can help each other, lift each other up. We grow our own food. We could take care of it ourselves, and we could help the community. We're not useless people. We're just treated that way and looked at that way. And if there was a will from the community to actually help us, it would be over.
Yes. Well, it's good to hear from you, Chelsea. Thank you for that call. And I'm just going to read a tweet that just came in from Pamela, who says, please don't promote the fiction that suddenly thousands of people became mentally ill and thus homeless. Most people are homeless because they can't afford housing. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, we urge you to go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to more of your calls with Kevin Fagan. Let me go next to Lafayette. Tom, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me. A question, if you had to name names for who the leader is in this initiative, the civic leader, is there a certain name that pops out, be it for San Francisco or the broader Bay Area, or is it leadership by committee? And if it is leadership by committee, do we really have a chance to really address this initiative or address this issue that everybody's facing?
Tom, let me understand. You're asking about leadership on homelessness in San Francisco. I mentioned Jeff Kaczynski. I mean, he comes immediately to mind. Yeah.
Oh, he does. He's well steeped. He goes way back. He knows the best practices. He doesn't have political power. He has a lot of power over the programs. He's continually pummeled by all sides on that. You need a political leader to step up.
Has anybody stepped up here, in your judgment?
Well, Breed is trying to step up. You know, she wants to open 1,000 shelter beds, and she's putting a lot of attention into conservatorship for mentally ill people. She's trying that. Sam Liccardo in Santa Clara County is stepping up as well.
What about in the legislature?
Well, Scott, you know,
homelessness. Yeah.
Yeah, he's pushing. Ping is pushing. Newsom, I think once Newsom gets his feet on the ground on this, he may well push, because he pushed hard here in San Francisco. And I would anticipate he's going to make some moves in Sacramento.
What do you think, I mean, as someone who has been covering this low these many years, about Care Not Cash? I mean, how does it look now from this perch at time?
I thought it was a practical program. It created a lot of housing fast. What got fumbled, I thought, was taking the eye off the ball of housing the most severely, chronically homeless people. They started creaming, as we call it, taking the easy ones in, which left the really, you know, the troublesome ones on the street more, the dysfunctional people who needed the expensive supportive housing most. But a lot of housing got created. A lot of housing still gets created through it.
And here's Lars from Stanford, who wants to tell us about a dear friend of his falling into homelessness. Lars, join us.
Yes. Hi, thank you. So a teacher and dear friend from Esalen, Patrick, had a downward spiral a couple of years ago. And a number of us from the community came together to give support and do the best we could, and in so doing learned a couple of things. One is that raising money to help somebody who's in a downward spiral and living homelessly on Facebook is not necessarily the best solution, and two, that people like he who are living on the streets get misdiagnosed and underdiagnosed chronically when they're 5150'd as schizoid affective disorder, these archaic these archaic DSM designations that do not get you on a housing list. So he has been living in a broken tent in China camp with all of us knowing that he's in dire straits because he is in a state, in a condition that he's not able to come out of, and he is coming out of it. He calls me daily, but I'm one of the people of his support that has been overwhelmed and depleted and in a depression for a long time. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, Lars, thank you for calling. I think emphasizing the need for support systems and, with family and friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Family and friends makes a huge difference. Seen it time and time again. And what we need is more the best thinking that we've been able to discern at the Chronicle and my reporting and others like Aaron Alday, wonderful reporter we have. Board and care homes. We need more board and care homes for the mentally ill. At least as an interim step.
So when you look at the overall picture, I mean, you got these new figures now, over 8,000. Last year it was 6,800 or so.
Yeah.
What again, instills hope in you, or what ignites hope in you?
Oh, boy. There are efforts to create more affordable housing. It's stepped up. In a lot of people's minds, it's not enough, and the people pushing it say it's not enough, but it is stepping up. This is going to be a victory if it is achieved. It'll be a victory by inches.
It's a war, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And it's a war that doesn't seem to be, at this rate, having much in the way of white flags or at least the possibility of some kind of surrender. I guess we'll leave it there. Kevin, always
sure.
Good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's Kevin Fagan from the San Francisco Chronicle, who has been doing really important work on this and has stayed consistently with it. Let me just read a couple of comments here. Adam says, homelessness and housing crisis, just a new take on an old story. Unfettered American capitalism has allowed the rich to get richer with the rest of us left behind. And Celeste says, what can an average person do about homelessness? I'm in Oakland and retired. I could do something to help, but don't know what to do. Well, I think we heard that from that caller who said you can indeed and should, if you can, extend support in any way you possibly can. Thank you all for being with us this first hour of Forum. Another hour ahead, Norman Ed is joining us in the hour ahead. We're going to talk with him and Pico Iyer, famed travel writer who did a memoir about his life in Japan. Stay tuned. Michael Krasny here.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.